Hello, everyone. This is Forrest, and I am very pleased today to have Dr. Peter Zafiridis, MD, joining us. Dr. Zafiridis is a psychiatrist in Ohio. He is a passionate supporter and evangelist for TMS, has been so for a long time. He is also a board member of the Psychophysiologic Disorders Association, also known as the PPDA, and he is also, if that weren't enough, he is the proprietor of the Healthy Mind Network, and you can listen to his podcasts, which he posts weekly at The Healthy Mind. That information, we will pass that through at various times again, in case you missed that. I also wanted to say to get a couple things, business-like things, out of the way at the very beginning. The first is we handle this very informally, and it really is a pleasure to do so. We have probably about 13 people on the line right now. All of us have had TMS at some point, and we are just connecting with each other as people getting better, who have gotten better and are still interested in learning more, or people who are struggling with our recovery. And so we have that common ground, and my hope is that we can make a connection based on that. Given that, it is very important always to bear in mind that there is no professional relationship here. Dr. Zafiridis might be, or is in fact, a doctor, as I mentioned, but he's not giving professional advice. So this is in no way meant to substitute for, say, a doctor. If you have health concerns, it is just basic common sense that you need to go get a doctor, go see a doctor, and make sure that any plan of action that you take is going to be safe for you. Nothing can substitute for a real doctor in that. You don't want to be diagnosing yourself. So you use all the information, you know, at your own risk. You make that decision. This will be covered by the standard TMS Wiki disclaimer. If you go to a Wiki page, you can scroll down to the bottom and see it. I'll try and post that into the chat at some point so you can see it. But the final thing that I want to say is that we're recording this. There are a lot of people who can't make it today, and they wanted to participate. They're big fans of Dr. Zafiridis. If you follow the forums, you will have seen some of his posts. And so we are recording this, as it mentioned at the beginning of the recording. And by participating in the call, you give us the right to post this on the web. We'll be posting it on, we'll be making a download available. We may put it on iTunes. We may put it up on YouTube. Distribution will, of course, be very limited because this is the TMS world that we're talking about, and it'll basically just be other members of the community, I would expect, that would listen to it. But, you know, we're going to put it up. And by saying something, you give us the right to do that. If you don't want to do that, then don't say anything. I hope that you'll participate anyway. If you have any questions about any of this stuff, you can just write it in the chat. But I guess that is it. We've had some really terrific callers in the past for previous events that we've had like this. They've just added so much. So I am excited to see what is going to happen today. All right. With that being said, I guess I've introduced Dr. Zafiridis. I suppose I can start out Dr. Zafiridis, if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background and how you came to learn about TMS and why you care so much about it.
Absolutely. I just want to make sure you can hear me okay, Rob.
I hear you perfectly.
All right, perfect. Well, welcome, everybody. It really is a pleasure. I've been looking forward to this for quite a while. My name is Peter Zafiridis. I'm a psychiatrist in Columbus, Ohio. And how I came to this, I guess over the years, I've always had interest in chronic pain. Did so in my psychiatry residency. I did my medical school training at Ohio State University and then my residency training there as well. During that time, I had done an externship at Memorial Sloan Kettering in the psychiatry department there with the interface, particularly in malignant pain and where psychiatry felt fit into the entire part of that individual's care in chronic pain that was malignant. But over the years, worked in that and also in benign pain as well. So there was always this interest that I've had. But over the years, as of course life would have it, we fast forward into early 2000, and I had an episode of back pain. I never had back pain before in my life. I thought it was an injury, and it just was not getting better. And I had the mind-body prescription in my bookshelf for probably 3, 4, 5 years prior. It was just sitting there. I had always meant to get around to it. It seemed interesting, but I had never read it. And it was at that time I thought, well, let me take a little bit of time and read this. And like many of us who have had TMS and have struggled through the years and then have gotten better, I had one of those book cures. And it was amazing to me. Here I am, a psychiatrist who's supposed to understand the emotional parts of pain and how our mind can fall into the patterns that it does, including physical symptoms. But here I had that happen as well. So it was an amazing experience for me, and that really changed everything at that point for me, both personally, because I could not believe what had happened to me, and professionally as well. And at that point, I started learning more about this. I had also spent some time later with Dr. Sarno in his clinic for a brief period of time, and just began to develop this part of my career. I still do your, I guess, bread and butter psychiatry, if you will, depression and anxiety and the like. But over the years in my practice, whether people have come in with symptoms, be they pain or other physical symptoms, we've talked about it informally, and then over the years have had people who have come in specifically for TMS. So I do that as well in my practice. I've kind of taken it my own small way in within TMS, and for those of you that have followed me or have read on the Healthy Mind, wherever you may be getting the information, my area of interest is in existential psychotherapy. And when I read the TMS information, particularly from Dr. Sarno and also from Dr. Schechter at the time, combined with my interest and in my training in existential therapy, I started to just develop maybe where I thought for me personally some of the gaps were in that theory, and have just developed that model of understanding within it. I don't see it as competing in any way. It is complementary, and really the process is very much the same. There's not a difference. I just add a little bit more from the existential component to it as some of the reasons why we have the pains that we do. So that's where I have come to incorporate TMS and PPD into my practice. And as I had gone to a couple of the conferences over the last couple of years, was fortunate enough to be included in the group that was forming the PPDA, and here we are.
Excellent. Thank you so much for saying that. Could you tell us a little bit about, first of all, just in terms of clarification, there were some questions. What's the difference between benign and malignant pain? You
sure
mentioned that early.
That's a really good question. And in malignant pain, I meant cancer pain. So when I had first started in my training, my area of interest, and I think it was because of my existential orientation in therapy, a lot of the interest that I had wasn't just in the physical pain and the emotional pain in the individual, but also when it was confounded or compounded by end of life. So in those individuals that were terminal, I used to do consults over at the James Cancer Center in Columbus here at Ohio State University, our cancer hospital, and had built a relationship with a couple of the doctors, Dr. Nino Benedetti at OSU, who had done the palliative care research. So how do we properly take care of pain in those individuals who are near the end of their life because of cancer? So that was where the interest really came first, and then as I expanded, I moved it out into benign pain in the sense that it is not due to cancer, it's not a terminal issue. So those are the differences there between malignant and benign pain. So I didn't mean to mean that it was any less in terms of the suffering, but the origin is one is cancer, the other one is not cancer.
Oh, I see. Okay. Uh-huh. That's helpful. So yeah, I think there's a lot of interest I know I'm interested in this approach, existential approach to psychotherapy. I've gotten a couple of books. Now, I can't claim to have finished reading all of these books, but some books by Irvin Yalom.
Yes.
I know he is a noted existentialist psychotherapist. I have Love's Executioner. I have not gotten far into that, but I gather that's a fiction book.
Partly fiction.
Okay, sort of tells stories. It tells stories of psychotherapy.
That's right.
Yeah. So I am looking forward to reading that. I haven't yet. It sounds like it's quite a good story. And also The Gift of Therapy, which is an open letter to the next generation of therapists and clients of psychotherapy. But I still don't feel like I know very much about it, and it seems like a large and a deep subject. Could you tell us a little bit about it?
Absolutely, I would be happy to. And certainly, Dr. Yalom was one of my main influences, and fortunately in my training, I did have a few attendings who were followers of him, so I did get introduced to that fairly early in my career. But the basic part of existential therapy, or at least where this type of psychology understands behavior of all types, is that there are core anxieties that are part of the human condition. This isn't something that is abnormal. We all have them as part of everything that motivates us every single day of our lives. And in what Dr. Yalom attempted to do in his book, Existential Psychotherapy, which really is the seminal book for this type of therapy, is to break it down into a few maybe easy to digest components and understand where our behavior may be coming from. And he broke it down into four main anxieties. He called them the ultimate concerns, or the existential concerns of life. And those were mortality or death, meaning versus meaninglessness, freedom versus restrictions, and then isolation, existential loneliness. So when we fight between these conflicts, for example, the conflict of our mortality versus knowing that we'll die versus we're living now, the aloneness, wanting to be connected, but also on some level, we are really alone in ourselves. That gap can't be bridged. The conflict between trying to define meaning in our life, but also at times realizing the only meaning we create, or the only meaning that we have really, is the meaning we create. And then also the conflict between wanting freedom and choice, but recognizing that if we take that freedom, then we're responsible for our path. And those conflicts push back and forth. And one of the ways that I've tried to describe it and continue to do in my patients is this idea of the existential onion. So that if we've got all these onion layers, and those onion layers represent everything that we do, our behaviors, it's not defense mechanisms in an unhealthy way, but all the things that we do, ways that we live our lives to avoid being alone, to put meaning into our lives, to feel like we're in control, whether it's a career or a partner, a marriage, children. When we're feeling well, we feel well. But when we start to feel emotionally that we are struggling, depression or anxiety, those layers of the onion peel away. And at the core are some of these ultimate concerns. And really, when we look at those, or when we think about these concerns about what meaning is there in life, what's the purpose of our life, you know, are we really alone, what is this all about if our life is finite, we start to get nervous and sad and upset. And at least this is how I've come to understand a lot of, not necessarily just TMS, but all behavior in general, because when I see my patients in my practice and in therapy, when they're not feeling well, these are the issues that come up. What is the purpose? I just don't see the point of going on. I feel like I'm going to be this way forever. I feel so alone. So where the initial theory had come out specifically as it related to TMS and PPD, it was developed along kind of a psychoanalytic framework, Freudian framework, that anger and rage suppressed is the main focus and the main emotion that needs to be kept at bay. The threat is of this anger or rage being released. And in response, the body will do whatever it needs to, including create physical pain to protect against that. Now, that isn't neurotic in any way. It is survival. And where I have taken it just in my own interpretation has been, yes, there's anger and rage, but there's also anxiety and more of that existential futility. Whenever we get into situations or things that have happened in our past, what we see is those issues come up, issues of loneliness, issues of meaning and purpose, issues of our freedom or of our mortality, and those are just as pressing and threatening to our own individual psyche as is the rage and the anger that was initially discussed by Dr. Sarno. So when I say my existential theory on TMS, I hope everyone understands it's complementary. It is not exclusionary in any way. The existential approach is a little bit different in the way that the therapist and the patient relate to each other, at least in the understood power structure. Whereas in existential therapy, the goal is for it to be as equal as possible so that the person sitting across from you as a patient sees you as a human individual, because these issues of existential concern are something that I'm fighting as well or am trying to wrestle with as well. The only difference is a few of the layers, let us say, of the existential onion have peeled away and others are feeling it more than I am. So it is that, and to me, at least in the way that I live, that my philosophy on life is and how I understand emotional illness and behavior and certainly TMS, that just really fit with me. And I think one of the issues has been over the years in doing some of the TMS treatment is that, what am I angry about? What is this rage? I don't feel angry. Why is it just anger? And certainly that can be repressed or suppressed in a way that people can't be in touch with it. But what I try to introduce as well is, let's talk a little bit about the existential anxieties and some of the ways that those, when they get a little bit too much to the surface, we start to feel bad. And the same process occurs in service to these existential anxieties. Pain is a mechanism by survival that is activated to protect against that. So it doesn't change just because we add the existential approach to this. All it does is allow for a little bit more of a flowering of that initial theory.
Helps people understand better what could be going on. Okay, can you hear me?
I'm sorry, I'd hit mute there for a second. Sorry about that.
No worries at all. All right. I mean, that's what I like too, and I've noticed that people on the forum are very good at integrating different ideas, but I think that's very important. I do remember that's one thing that Urban Yalom said, is that it is still psychoanalysis. It's still very much psychoanalysis, and that this is just a new way of looking, opens up your eyes, and helps people understand. Got a question now from Veronica, and it looks very interesting. Thank you, everyone, for posting questions. The more interactive we can make it, I think the better this will be. Veronica's question was, it sounds like existential anxiety is something different than having an anxiety disorder or obsessing. Is that correct, Dr. Zafiridis?
That is, and it's a great question by Veronica. The issue, there is differences there, because the anxiety disorder or obsessing, those are disorders. And there are many, many theories as to why that is happening, some biological, some are psychological. And not that our existential anxiety can't cause anxiety disorders and obsessive disorder, but the existential anxiety really is a description of the human condition. Okay, that is who we are. In the same way that Freud talked about the basic urges and drives, if you will, the pleasure principle, that in general as human beings, we move away from pain and we seek towards pleasure.
And that's the id that does that, correct?
Exactly. And there's always the balance between the superego saying, wait, these aren't things that you should be going after, this kind of pleasure, and the id saying, no, I want to be going towards that. And the ego is who we are. In existential therapy, it's just a little bit different in the sense that the ultimate concerns are the basic drives for us, and that the same type of defense mechanisms can occur. So, for example, why we marry in terms of putting meaning in our life and not feeling alone. why we have children. Part of that, I'm not saying this is the only reason, and again, I'm not trying to connect dots that aren't there, just in terms of what the existentialists are saying. Part of the reason is also that we immortalize ourselves through our children. So in that way, we ease that anxiety that is always burning in us about the inevitability of our death. So these aren't just existential or ultimate concerns that are only when a person is feeling badly, but the same reasons that we sit there throughout our lives and say, whether it's when we're young or when we're in school or in middle age or when we have gotten older, what was this all about? What is this all about? What do I really want? What is the point of my life, the purpose of my life? The same type of existential anxiety is there motivating us to do the healthy things. But also here, when we aren't feeling well, whether it's depression or anxiety or TMS, we see that this is the origin of that as well. So it's interesting that obsessive compulsive or obsession was being talked about there, because if we look at TMS and you look at some of the underlying or the theories there, even from Freud, in terms of why people have OCD, there's a lot of similarities there. The core of and the purpose of the obsessions, when you look at it under psychoanalytic theory, is much like TMS. It is a purposeful distraction, and it prevents a person from needing to access those other parts of their mind that are very anxious or feel terror-filled. So if I focus on the fact that I've got to count four times before I touch the doorknob or check all the locks 10 times before I can go to bed, I don't have to worry about what's underneath that. So to me, I see many, many, if there's one disorder in psychiatry that runs very, very close to the underlying kind of psychological mechanism as TMS, it would be OCD, because that's what we see as the underlying theory there, an important, purposeful distraction that is survival-based because the underlying threat is too great.
So in both OCD and in TMS, the ego is afraid, trying to protect itself, and so it either creates the OCD or it creates the TMS, the pain, or other symptoms to distract it and protect itself. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's absolutely right.
Good. Another question that we had is about the word existential, and this seems like a good question. What meaning do you have? How do you explain the choice of the word existential for the existential approach to psychotherapy?
No, it's a great question, because anytime we think existential, someone is thinking about a coffee shop and patches on a sports coat, right, in the autumn. But I think for just the basic way that I understand existential, period, is just the issues of our existence, period. I mean, let's not make it too much about philosophy or too academic or feeling like it's approachable because it's hard to understand. Existential just means meaning the issues of our existence. What are the things that give us meaning and purpose? And specifically as it relates to existential theory with psychotherapy, all we're saying is, look, let's respect those issues of our existence, the fact that we want to find meaning. We don't want to be alone. We have to wrestle with the fact that eventually we die. And how do we understand this in the reason why people behave, both in healthy ways, but also when we're trying to treat them in unhealthy ways? So, to me, existential therapy is, or existential, the term, is just the issues of our life or our existence.
Excellent. Okay. And that makes sense. Certainly, if I have a large anxiety, I'm afraid of something, it feels natural for me to say that this is an existential issue. It's a big issue. It's an important thing to me. Speaking of connecting different diagnoses in terms of their common mechanism of distraction, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, asked the question, are addictions also TMS manifestations? In other words, are they also distractions from underlying unconscious turmoil, or can they be?
Yeah, and it's an absolutely wonderful question and a very interesting one to think about. It's hard to say for sure. I've not necessarily thought about it completely as a TMS manifestation, but I could certainly understand that in the sense that the behaviors that we have, whether they're healthy or unhealthy, or even the TMS that we have, is in service to something that is threatening and is painful. So oftentimes, people will use both alcohol and drugs as a means by which to escape or avoid the pain there that is there. So certainly I could see that in terms of where that might have some TMS-like features. But in what Natalique is saying there, I think that they are distractions from underlying turmoil because it is pain. And it is rarely that people are drinking simply just to get high or get drunk for the sake of that feeling, but it usually is to be able to escape away from some deeper pain.
Trying to dull the pain. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so moving forward, if people would like to, so in the past events, when we've done this with Alan Gordon, he found that it was tremendously helpful for people to get on the phone and ask questions about their specific case. So if anyone is interested in doing that, you can just type something into the chat and say, hey, I'd be interested in asking a couple questions about my case with Dr. Zafiridis, and I will unmute you. You'll have to tell me what in via phone. You'll have to tell me the last four digits of your telephone number, or even just the last three. Or you can do your username if you're calling in using a headset through your computer, and then I will unmute you then. Livy Girl chimes in. She says, I think addictions can be distractions from facing deeper issues. I would agree. Mm-hmm. You always see these people facing trauma, and then they head to the bar and drown their sorrows. All right, so... next question I thought would be interesting. I mean, when I think about the existential anxieties, I spend a lot of time on our TMS forum helping people. And when I first listened to your podcast about existential anxieties and TMS, I started seeing people facing existential anxieties all over the place on the forum. And I think that's how I at least like to use it, is saying, okay, can we understand what we're facing? Can we understand perhaps the sources of our rage by looking at them through the lens of these existential anxieties? And so I thought it might be helpful in terms of doing that to start going through some of the anxieties one by one, and talking, perhaps you could talk about an example of a TMS patient whom you worked with and who was able to make some progress, who by finding the root cause of one of their existential anxieties and then coming to terms with that somehow and getting better. Does that sound like a good place to go from here?
Sure.
No. Okay.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. Yeah, let's take one. You know, a lot of times, one of the issues that comes up the most, and I think everyone can relate to it, I know I certainly can, is there's something about the physical pain, much like emotional pain of depression. When you are feeling in pain, no one else can feel that. You're the only one who can feel that pain and truly know how that is impacting your life, both physically and emotionally. So oftentimes a lot of the feelings of existential isolation and aloneness can be there also making you feel a bit worse because of the physical pain. So no one can really know how we feel when we are in physical or emotional pain. And that kind of is the heart, that gap, if you will, between being around and being with people, but also that gap of where we are also our own entity. But one man in particular, which I thought was a great case because he didn't come in to see me at first for TMS, was he's just about to retire from Ohio State University. He's a full professor and had been there, he's going on... just about 35 years at the university now. And he was just a rock star in his department. He was in the sciences and always was able to just get these grants. I mean, he was always bringing in huge grants to the university.
Tell us about that. Keep going, sorry.
They just loved him. And he greatly enjoyed it, published, and he got to speak literally around the world. And really, the world caught up to him with some of the science that he was doing, particularly in the environmental arena. But he comes to 35 years. And when you talk to him at first, he had come in to see me for this anxiety and depression a few years prior. And I think he was starting to just contemplate that most of his career was over. And he really wasn't happy anymore at the university. He realized that he couldn't let himself slow down. And he always felt like he had to perform. And if you dug deeper with him, why that was happening was he came from a very small town in West Virginia, and it was a very, very difficult upbringing for him. No one in his family to that point, and I think of his siblings, had gone to college. He was the only one who decided to break away. But he remembered early on in his life the fear, and he could palpate it, and it made him upset. At points, he would drink to just kind of cool that down, the fear of being stuck in that town because he didn't have an education, and the insecurity, the self-esteem that he did not have because he came from that small town. So part of his motivation and the energy, even though he was able to, on a conscious level, say, well, I just love doing this research, was really that he always had to prove to himself that he was not going back to that town, that he wasn't going to be stuck there. And that was something, even when I had seen him, what now was about, been about 5 years, so went 30 years at the university, he still to that day could crystallize that kind of motivation, even though he was so accomplished and had achieved so much within the department. Well, we fast forward here a few years later, and never really had problems with pain. I saw him principally for depression, and alcohol at times would flare off and on, but he really had gotten to the point where now there's some changes that are happening with the university here at OSU and the way that they're going to structure retirement benefits and the like. So he really had to make a decision here on a firm date, or else he was not going to be able to be eligible for some of the grandfathering to get the benefits that he was promised in the past. So he really has to start thinking about retiring. And he was very tired the last couple of years, just in terms of the pace that he was going. His chairman was not necessarily saying or putting the irons to the fire. He was doing a lot more teaching, but he just could not stop researching and working and really slowing down. And there came a time where he came in, and it really was where he had realized, this is the date that I'm going to be leaving the university. And he comes in, and I see him grabbing his neck. I'm like, you know, what's going on? And he's like, I don't know. I must have slept on it wrong or something. I don't know. And said, how long has that been going on? He's like, it's been about, you know, the last few weeks, but it's really been bad the last week or so. And, you know, over the last week or so, he had really started doing some of the paperwork and really finalizing the term when he would be leaving, which would be the end of this academic year. So he'll be finishing up in June. So I said, isn't that interesting? You know, he tried a bunch of, you know, just over-the-counter remedies and had done a massage, but it had gone away. And, you know, I looked at him and I said, you know what, that's not in your neck. And he's like, what do you mean it's not my neck? I said, well, no, the pain is in your neck. But that, you know, it isn't because of an issue in your neck. And you know, this guy's an academic. I mean, he's a really sweet guy, and we have a great relationship. But, you know, he said, well, you know, what the heck are you talking about? So we started talking about it a little bit, and I told him about Dr. Sarno and TMS, and just in terms of how I look at it and have treated patients. And I said, isn't it interesting that around the time when it literally is becoming a reality here of you retiring, and you're going from somewhere where the last 30, 35 years, you've had profound success, you've been able to carve out meaning and purpose in your life, and now you're looking at the end of that career, and I guess maybe the death of that career, and what happens next. And even though he knew of a lot of things he would like to do, he didn't really have a clear path on what would happen next. So I said, why don't you read Mind Body Prescription? I have a copy in my office. And I said, well, just take it and read it and just come back next month and let's see what happens. And, well, he came back next month and, you know, he's got this silly grin on his face. And, you know, it's just like De Niro. I can't remember the movie, but it's like, you're good. You are very good. And he pointed at me and he goes, I can't believe it. And I go, what? He goes, I started reading this book. And I got about halfway through it, and you know, I could see it was me. And by the end of the read, I wasn't in pain. I haven't had pain for the last 3 weeks. And, you know, of course, I know him well, so I didn't mean it any cocky way, but I said, well, yeah, I know I'm that good. But he couldn't believe it either, you know, and it's, I said, well, it could be something else, but, you know, you've read this and you haven't done anything else other than read and give yourself a little bit of compassion about everything that you're going through, and the pain let up. And, you know, I'm happy to say that, you know, since that time, he hasn't had any recurrence of pain. You know, we don't always see it that dramatically, but it is, you know, it is something where we can see very clearly how both these underlying anxieties, I mean, here's a man that everything that he was working for and has succeeded, the motivation that was there is now ending. And he's also talked about you know, his own death, and he had the loss of his ex-wife a year or two prior. So there was a lot of things going on there. Now, you know, I always have to say this, and all of us should within the TMS community, just because I say this is the interpretation of what happened does not mean that this, in fact, is the reason that this individual got better or that any of you get better. You know, we come at this and try to explain it. I think that it is certainly real in terms of what is happening here, but only you and your mind, whether you consciously know it or not, know the reasons as to why the mind can then let up. So we offer these different, and I think that's the beauty within the TMS community, that we have all these different approaches, because for not everyone is the classic theory going to just resonate. Not everyone is really going to feel connected to the existential approach. Not everyone's going to feel connected to Alan Gordon's approach with CBT. But we put them out there because some people will connect to one or the other. So I think the basic underlying principle here that our emotions can actually debt, and that it does so out of survival, not from a point of pathology or neurosis, that there's something wrong with us or weak. That's the important thing to take home. But it really was a remarkable quick vignette. Others where I could give for a much longer description of some folks that had gotten better, but I just thought that was one of those book cures that just happened to, you know, nice, clean, and tidy, that's perfect for a discussion of this type.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good story. It's a good story and something that I think all of us can relate to. It seems like retirement in general would be a major source of stress for people, TMS stress as well, sources of meaning change. So we're faced with that existential anxiety. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
No, I think that's very true. Really, any kind of change in our life, it doesn't even necessarily need to be negative, if you will, or a loss per se. People look forward to retirement. People look forward to marriage, to having children. But it does, on one level, where it changes our lives for a positive, it does represent the loss, even in our mind, psychologically, of a different part of our life, right? I mean, the other night, it was last night, sitting here at home with my wife and our children. We have three children, and they're running around and climbing all over everything and on top of us. And, you know, it was about 8 o'clock, and I said, boy, I remember just a few years ago where 8 o'clock for me is, you know, I'm starting to call people and find out what folks are doing. And now we've got, you know, diapers to change, and kids are, you know, just running us mad. But, you know, but there's an essence there of both. There's one in terms of, I wouldn't change it for the world, but it still doesn't mean that my life has changed. And I'm very, very happy where I'm at in my life, but it also represents the loss or the death of my single life as well. So I think any of these moments, and especially retirement, because it's, in addition to it being something that we look forward to in our life, it really does represent not just the end of our career, but really it represents on a deeper level the death really of our most productive time in our life, perhaps the most vital part of our life. I'm not diminishing getting older and how important that is in retirement and that it isn't fulfilling in any way, but that has a different flavor to it. There's so much conflict that can be there, particularly, and I see it in my practice, not even with TMS, but depression and anxiety. One of the biggest reasons that people will come in to see me is how they're struggling with retirement, or parents who are getting sicker or have dementia and the like, that there's this representation, this change in the responsibilities, but also the death of a certain part of our lives. And that oftentimes can be a very powerful 1-2 punch as it relates to TMS, because it forces us to think of so many things. The loss of a time when we were very productive, the reconciliation of the fact that we are closer than in retirement to our death, even though it is a time now for us to do whatever we want. But then it's up to us to do whatever we want. We're not told what to do. And while that can be wonderful with freedom, it can be very, very nerve-wracking for our psyche. And, you know, the example I always give is, you know, you've got your cable box at home and there's 1,000 channels, but most of us watch 7 or 8 channels. And if I had to think about, you know, flipping through 1,000 channels to get the right show, I'd be overwhelmed. So there is the conflict. We want to know we've got 1,000 channels, but if we were forced to pick all of them, we rarely do. We find the structure that fits for us. And we do that on a larger level within our own lives and the way that we understand our lives.
I see. So as you were talking, guest 152 spoke up and they said, I think I experienced a similar experience by graduating college 2 years ago. My clear path was being a good student, getting straight A's. Now what comes next? My pain started almost immediately after that when I started working. And I can absolutely relate to that. Those who've watched my YouTube success story, they know that my symptoms started my junior year of college as I was anticipating graduation, and it was after that that they got really terrible. So it was absolutely for me about, you know, that sort of transition. And I think it's no coincidence that my TMS manifested itself through typing and through handwriting and through speaking, because that's how you communicate, and it's through communication that you make money. Like, that's how you survive, and for a lot of people, at least that was my plan in today's economy. So I can absolutely relate to that.
No, and I think that really is a very common time where we see that. I think on some level, you know, it timed perfect as well with my experience at that point. I had been a year or two, you know, out of residency, and certainly I remember at that time a relationship that was moving on very seriously, but I was not very comfortable in it, and it took. I know that the pain was there for me as well as. Enough of a discussion away from a very difficult question that I had to, or a very difficult discussion that I had to have in my life. But in general, that is a very common time where we see it. And even Dr. Sarno has talked about this. If you saw natural course, or understand the natural course of pain, if we understood it by a physical phenomenon, say it's a disc bulging or our spine shrinking or the bones getting weaker, we would expect that pain would start as it normally does when we look at TMS, but that you wouldn't see it start to drop off towards the later parts of our lives. Where we see the most type of pain is located simply in the years of when we're supposed to be the most productive, in our 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and then in the 60s it drops off. Anatomically, physiologically, that's impossible. If anything, we're getting weaker and our body is continuing to deteriorate. It doesn't make sense that we would have less pain as we get older, yet the pain tends to diminish. Now, that doesn't prove that it's psychological, but it certainly does add the part there where it forces us to consider the fact that it doesn't make sense purely from an anatomic or a medical reason as well, because that's just not how we don't suddenly heal in our 60s. So I think that that's really an important consideration to really think about as individuals are saying, well, how could it possibly be TMS? But a lot of times where you'll first see, whether a person comes in for the first time or historically when I'm taking a history and the person that I see for TMS, a lot of times it is very similar to what guest 152 had talked about here, was that, you know, it started right when I finished college, when I started working. And it's usually important at that point to, and again, not trying to, you know, figure out what's happening with this individual, but does this mean that one is terrified of the fact that they have to carve out their own path? Is there something that is unsettled with their path that this isn't necessarily what they wanted to do, they were told to do or thought they wanted to do? Feeling like they're trapped, even though they can make any choice that they want. There's so many things that happens, and usually it's the first time, really, after college, that we have to stand up on our own and make those decisions. And that can be terrifying. That can be very terrifying, because on an existential level, something like that, deciding what I'm going to do with my life and what has to happen next, and I'm totally in charge, forces us to understand that we're totally alone in that decision to actually make it. Others can give us opinions, but only we know what would be right for us after we hear those opinions.
Now, that's interesting that you bring it back to existential anxieties, because that's where I wanted to go as well. I mean, I think how is this call going to help people? I think it's probably going to help people by helping them understand the existential anxiety so that they can see them in their own life and help them see that as a cause of their TMS. So I guess I've heard, so you talked about a bunch of anxieties coming up as you graduate from college or enter the workforce after high school or whenever. It sounds like there's freedom, and it sounds like there is connection. Am I getting that right? Like, could you explain that a little bit more so people can get that?
If we look at that in terms of what Guest 152 said, she said, I think I experienced a similar experience by graduating college 2 years ago, and my clear path was being a good student, getting straight A's. Now what comes next? All right, so now think about that. You know, one of the things there is what comes next. I have to make that decision. There's that issue of isolation and aloneness. I have to make this decision. Mm-hmm. I was a good student. I was getting straight A's. It's what I'm supposed to do.
And certainly whether classic TMSer.
Exactly, exactly. So whether it's existential or the classic anger and rage, the fury about I have to do it this way. There's no other way that I can do it despite what I want to do. And really, we look at the issues of freedom that are there as well. I'm free to choose whatever I want, but don't give me all of that freedom because I'm overwhelmed. Again, 1,000 channels, 8 that we pick. You know, we want to know we've got the ability to do anything, but we really don't always want to be told what to do. But we want to feel at least that we are in control. Now, whether that touches on existential anxiety or more of the classic kind of TMS, the anger and rage in that, you know, that to me doesn't really matter. It's the fact that I think it's the exact same thing. I'm just talking about it in a slightly different way. But these issues bring up those core feelings within us that threaten us, that scare us. And when they scare us that much, we have to do something about it. And for some of us, what we do is have pain so that we don't access it as close as we're afraid of.
Okay, so it sounds like these existential anxieties, it's almost like they're additional tools that we can add to our toolbox for understanding what's going on inside of us and therefore better understanding our TMS pain. Is that so you still have the classic tools of rage. Now you also have 4 new tools of or the classic tools of superego, blocking the id as a source of rage, whatever other tools you may already have, you're just adding additional tools of freedom, of isolation, of death, etc.
That's absolutely right. I couldn't say it any better. I think that certainly in what we're all hoping to do within the PPD community over time is figure out those that are very, very interested in understanding and how they've come to both understand PPD and TMS and how they've treated it. And as long as someone has given time and consideration and thought to it, I think all of those theories are welcome because not everyone is going to respond in the exact same way. You know, I had someone who had emailed me last week, individual named Rich out of Chicago. And he said, you know, I Sarno changed my life, and I've had incredible relief with reading his books and Dr. Schechter's books and Dr. Schubiner's book as well. But, you know, PT helps me as well. And do I, you know, he was feeling very badly about doing physical therapy as if he was ruining it or that he was, I think the way he put it was, I'm repudiating the theory by going to get physical therapy. And I said, whoa, hold on. I actually called him because it was such a striking email. And I said, wait a minute, you don't have to do that to yourself. I mean, just because we say it does not mean that it is absolute. And I think that we all have to have that humility. And basically what you're telling me with physical therapy is that you're exercising. Well, I would tell a TMS patient to go exercise. So you don't, in the sense that that is knocking you down, that you're feeling badly because you're doing something that you acknowledge is healthy for you, you know, why would you do that to yourself? And I think he felt a lot better. He emailed me the next day and appreciated the discussion we had. So I think in general, I think that let us leave the umbrella open in trying to bring in theories that stay consistent with the original theory in terms of what is happening. But however a person begins to understand that and sees improvement, that's the important thing. So it's only in that spirit that I offer my point of view in this.
Yeah. It does feel like, I mean, I know that I personally have profited a lot from when I have problems with my knee, I go out and I run. You know, I'm very, very gentle about it because I don't want to scare myself more. But the best thing I ever did for my knee is I joined a broomball team. Broomball is a silly game. You all can Google it if you're curious. I shouldn't be anxious. I should be confident enough that I'm not anxious, but I still am anxious. So I totally understand others being anxious. I can still understand that anxiety is counterproductive, so I can say, don't be anxious. But I feel it sometimes myself. And so when I was anxious about my right knee, I went out and someone invited me to a broomball game, and I said, I'm not going to let this stop me. And, well, that's what worked for me.
Yeah, that broomball looks pretty fun. I'm looking at it right now.
It is kind of fun, you know. It's a nice casual chance to run around on the ice, hit a ball. And I think also you tapped on another thing which seems really important, which is freedom, and that everybody knows the best way that they can get better. I know that as someone who does a lot of work for the PPD-TMS peer network and also for the PPDA, I think one thing that I think is tremendously important is that everybody has the opportunity to, you know, develop their own ideas. I find so many of the people who post on forums, et cetera, are intellectuals. I really admire the ideas that they come up with and that they share with us. And I certainly hope to encourage that discourse and that dialogue and that sharing. Okay. Melanie, or Mel, said, Dr. Z, thank you so much for that. I have been seeing someone who is really helping me with supplements and exercise. Won't feel so guilty now. So there you go. One thing I notice in our chat rooms, they come by. Sometimes we disagree with each other. People who've been around for a long time. I tend to be one of the people who say, in general, I'll encourage people to stop anything which looks like a physical activity, but, you know, supplements and exercise, go for it. Yeah, Dr. Zafiridis wrote back, don't ever feel guilty. No one is judging you. And I think that's wonderful. I agree with that 100%. What were you saying?
I think that's important there, you know, for Mel. I mean, but I think it's for all of us because Rich was doing the same thing. You know, one shouldn't feel guilty about doing something that makes them feel better. If you're feeling better, that's all that matters. And the combination. Now, there's a caveat there, of course. I mean, there are certain things within the theory that do seem pretty absolute in terms of the fact that if this is truly TMS, I think it's pretty fair to say that things like anti-inflammatory medications, muscle relaxants, and the like aren't going to help you. Even Dr. Sarno says if anything you're going to be on for that is probably, and I'm not advocating doing the narcotics, but just speaking to the narcotics, that those relieve the pain. So, you know, we're not trying to say anything that's out there will work for TMS, but one shouldn't feel that just because they found something that truly works for them, that it can't be a complement to their overall improvement. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. And, you know, the won't feel so guilty now comment is really where we all kind of sit in terms of the self-judging and the person we're supposed to be, the good person. But there's no one judging. There's no one judging. And that's certainly not what this community is all about in terms of that. I think everyone in this community is open, and certainly those that I've been privileged to interact with in the PPDA is open to hear everything, no matter how firm or not firm, but how enthusiastic and they are about their theories and understand TMS in that way.
Yeah. That's wonderful. I totally agree. And, you know, I see people talking about when they do judge themselves about these things. I think it's something that a lot of people struggle with as they're recovering. And one of the things that people struggle with is how long it takes them to recover. I think some people sometimes judge themselves about that. They want to recover faster. They feel bad when they don't recover faster. So it's probably tough for you to comment on that, because all of you, the people who you work with who have TMS or PPD, whatever your favorite term is, they have the benefit of working with a psychiatrist. But could you tell me a little bit about, I mean, there is an important idea out there of calendar watching, that it's important not to watch the calendar and to recognize that sometimes it takes years. Could you comment on that?
No, that's absolutely true, and it's tough, because when you try and explain it, you know, especially for someone who's been doing it and is still in pain, it feels like we're making excuses that, well, and we might be blaming in terms of that it's interpreted as, well, I'm not doing it well enough, and that's why I'm not feeling better. But you know what you talk about is very true. Everyone goes through their own path. And it really is, for PPD and TMS, it really is this belief on a true level, on an authentic level. And really, I would say that belief in oneself, in this authentic belief in oneself, no matter whether it's TMS or anything anybody wants to accomplish, succeed in, it's the only time it happens. Because whenever we have those seeds of doubt, whether we do it consciously or unconsciously, we're going to undermine it. And, you know, for example, for me and getting the website and the podcast going, I had more than enough time for 20 years before I met my wife and children, but yet it happened now. And I think it was a coalescence of events that said this was the right time to do it, and I believe that I had the ability to do it right now. But everyone has that in their hearts, and they know whenever they face something that they've wanted to do, maybe have doubted it, and then there's been something that's changed and they've been able to succeed. And sometimes we know what it is, but sometimes we just don't know what it is that happens that changes us. And it's the same principle here for TMS. There really isn't a perfect roadmap. I think for most people, when they get the book cure, I think it is because they've never heard of this possibility or have thought about their emotions being able to be that powerful and that important in their ability to create physical pain. And a lot of times you'll see that happen, or in those that have had severe trauma. But what is it that actually causes the pain to be relieved? Is it really the book? Is it the literal words that Dr. Sarno or Dr. Schubiner or Dr. Schechter or Dr. Clark have in their books? Those words, or what I say on my podcast, those are the words that make the difference? Or is it maybe in enough time, there's enough validation that a person says, yes, I get it, this is me, and I truly believe and understand where this is coming from, and that I don't have to do that as well. Now, I truly believe, and then I don't have to do that. Those are two separate things, and not all of those come right next to each other. One can begin to understand how this process occurs, but yet there's a lot, just because one understands, hey, I'm doing this because of rage or anxiety or whatever it may be, doesn't mean that it's still not an important thing to protect you. And because what's being threatened here in those emotions is literally your survival. That is why the pain is there. What we perceive, and those of us that have TMS or have had it, is that the pain that is underlying is even more painful and threatening than the physical pain we have. So even though we understand it, that our emotions can do that, it doesn't mean that it's always that easy to shed that ghost. Right. And that's where it may take a lot of time. That's where it may be that you need to see someone, a therapist or a PPD practitioner, TMS practitioner, or go through the books again, or get on the forums, or get into the community. We just don't know what it is. In the same way that when I am in my therapy sessions and people come in, first off, I'm stunned at what makes the difference, and I always am humbled by that because Yalom always said, the healing is in the throw-ins, the things that you just happen to talk about that make you human, not the things that you think are going to have a person really get insight and change. So always remember that. So if one can understand that part of it is just the validation that a person believes that you care, that you're there for them truly, and that they can believe in themselves. That
the human relationship.
Exactly. Or just the compassion for oneself. Well, there's no clear path to that. And it may take some working. But what happens is that it does get better, and that all of us have that power within us to heal. It is in there. But when it doesn't come that quickly, I think we just have to respect compassionately what our mind is trying to do to protect us, and not feel like we're less than or that we're not strong enough to overcome this. That isn't there at all. But it just is being respectful and compassionate to the fact that there's still a lot of pain and energy devoted to protecting whatever it is underneath.
That makes a lot of sense. It does. So this begins to tap a little bit into some of the themes that I've heard in your podcast, The Healthy Mind, that you produce every week. I've had one of the main members in the peer network, Jan A., a.k.a. Jan A., the CPA. I believe that she said at one time, I don't know if I've told you this yet, that it's like having her own psychiatrist or her own psychotherapist. That she loves it. She says it's wonderful. I think that she really likes that aspect of how it's so clear that you believe in everybody's ability to heal themselves. Your slogan, never doubt how truly powerful you are. Can you, and you also just mentioned, you know, how it's the podcast and the website, that they're very important to you. Could you tell us a little bit about why you created that?
Yeah, you know, I've always been interested on the technological end of things and ways that maybe I could disseminate some of the information that I thought was important. I always saw it in doing The Healthy Mind, at least first, even not knowing what it was going to be, that it'd be a nice way that at least those who are my patients or would want to be my patients can get some of the information that I think is important for me, that maybe they would be interested in reading for their health overall. And just being able to get a voice out there a little bit about both the emotional part of things and also what's also been important to me in addition to the TMS and the work that I do there is to, you know, knock down a little bit of the stereotype or the stigma of what it means to have an emotional illness and what it means to go see a psychiatrist, and really for an individual to not feel like they're a pariah just because they have to go get help for depression or anxiety or TMS, and that you know, psychiatry has changed quite a bit, and it's not just med management as well. So in doing that, it was always in my mind, and you know, as chance or you know, as the universe had it, a couple of years ago, I was approached by someone here locally who had started a radio station and asked me if I was interested in doing a health show, and we developed The Healthy Mind, and had done that for the better part of a year. And then at that point, he had moved to manage some stations in Northern Ohio. And at that point, it seemed about the right time to start a website because I'd had about a year's worth of shows. And the way that it worked, it just the new owners and I just we just didn't match up as well as I did with Mike. And I thought, well, I can do these podcasts with the way the technology is. It's not that hard. And I just kind of took it onto my own website. So the goal of The Healthy Mind, really, its mission is, with the focus on the psychological issues and emotional issues, is really to just see how the mind and our emotions, how we behave, really, what goes into certain behaviors. I talk about it as it relates to emotional health, physical health. I try and pull some things from even things like marketing and behavior, because a lot can be learned by those who study the way we behave as it means for to make people better consumers, because it really is just tapping into really the ways we think and can be directed to act, really, when we purchase. All we're doing is, you know, lining up things that we more do a certain type of behavior. And I think it's an approachable and fun way to look at it, too. But the goal here really is for people to be empowered, because that's what I see in my practice. You know, people always say, why? How can you do this for a living and not be completely exhausted? But I realize the day goes along, I never feel tired, because yes, people come in with very difficult stories and traumas and tell you all of this. But first off, they trust you enough to tell you, which is an incredible responsibility and something I respect tremendously. But even with the negative things that are happening in their lives, it's still a human being who is showing up for life. And that has to be celebrated as well. Despite how they are feeling, no matter how bad it is, physical or emotional pain, they're still carving out meaning and fulfillment in their lives. So if we can knock down some of that noise, I mean, that's happening. And that's what I try to do with my patients, is at least to have them think about that. Not that they have to believe it, but to not even consider that, which is reality, to me is just, it's just so tragic. So, you know, not that I'm trying to give people false hope or patronize them, but no matter who it is with any struggle in their life, yes, it's a difficult time, but even though you feel you're not doing it as well as you could or handling it, you're still showing up. And that is the testament to your strength. You know, and that's what I try to use as really the anchor for moving people to better health.
Excellent. Okay, that's very interesting, and I totally agree. The people who I see on the forum, they are very inspiring. You know, just putting one foot in front of the other, doing our best. We may not understand everything, but we learn a little bit every day. Speaking of learning a little bit every day, you mentioned a term, PPD, and you also mentioned the PPD Association or the PPDA a couple times. Many on the call or who are listening to this afterwards may not know these terms. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about them and possibly a little bit about the conference that's coming up this October, which I think is pretty important, but I'll let you explain it.
No, certainly. Well, as I had said earlier when it started the chat, the webinar, you know, we had gotten together as a group a few years ago, first in Michigan and then in Los Angeles, a group of us who were like-minded, brought together through, I guess, maybe some commonality of Dr. Sarno, but really the mind-body perspective. How do our emotions, stress, psychology affect us physically? And the thinking was that, yes, we're a loose network of individuals, and Dr. Sarno started something so incredible when in his career and just on his own what he's been able to do. How do we carry that torch? How do we do that in a way that, one, we can have as complete of a theory as we can that is respectful to all of those who have started this movement, the pioneers of this movement, but also how do we do it in a way taking advantage of the ways that we can communicate with each other now and be able to meaningfully take it to that next level, building a network of clinicians, building a network of individuals who are empathic to this understanding and also have succeeded not only in treating it, but have also come through it as patients. So I think in that, all of us came together and said, well, we need to form an association and use that for advocacy, for training, and really to for support as well in the conferences and the way we would get together for community. So it was born there and trying to understand, you know, how do we do this? Because it isn't just strictly TMS, but how do we do this in a way that allows many of us to come under this tent? And from that, we thought psychophysiologic disorders. I mean, that's really what we're talking about here, PPD, the fact that the emotions and the physical will play in to causing physical pain and discomfort. And in that, this is where it began. Really, was the brainchild in its structure from Dr. David Clark. And David is the president of that organization, and has done some incredible work in getting it all together, and all of us in the board that are trying to do the right thing. And this year is the first year, at least as a formal organization, that we were lucky enough to be co-sponsored with New York University, where we'll present the conference, which is When Stress Causes Pain. And talk about the psychophysiologic on October 6th in New York City. So we're really, really excited. It'll be some of the most notable names who in the field, the most noted authors in the field, and clinicians. And I just can't wait for it. I'm so excited.
I think it's going to be wonderful
for New York University.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be great. So, I mean, I tend to think of it as a sequence of three conferences. The first one being in Michigan, and in Ann Arbor, and then after that, we created a wiki, kind of modeled after the first TMS wiki, to kind of debate some core principles. And that kind of petered out, and so we created a working group, and that working group had a bunch of people on it. And slowly, we decided to form a nonprofit and get 501c3 status, et cetera. So as I see it, and everybody has different perspectives on this, and it's certainly a thing for debate, I don't know if I've told you this, Peter, but there's actually two 501c3s now. The Peer Network just got its 501c3 status.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about that. So I think of the PPDA as being more of a practitioner association, and the PPD/TMS Peer Network as being more of a peer network, helping people with PPD or TMS helping each other. So another take on that. And I'd love to talk more, but I think that we're probably running out of time. We can go on, but I'm sure you've got other things you need to do, Dr. Zafiridis. So I think we have to...
Well, the time has absolutely flown. I mean, if there are other questions or anything, please, I don't want to make anyone feel like they haven't had a chance to either ask a question or bring up a point. So certainly, if there's something that someone else had a question, I'd be happy to stay on.
Any final questions that people want to ask? Hanging out in the chat room, seeing if people type anything. I don't see anything yet. So I'm going to start closing things up. But if people do have any final things that they want to bring up, I see a thank you. That's good. If anybody does have any final questions, you can still type it in while we're talking, and then we'll slip it in at the very end. I just wanted to thank you so much for joining us, Peter. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. It's been fascinating to learn about the existential approach a little bit more. Veronica just jumped in. Becca also to thank you. It's tough when you're being the host because you have to multitask so much. So I'm definitely looking forward to listening. Natalie says thank you to everyone who brought us this wonderful event, and Janice says thank you as well. So thank you very much for joining us. I hope that everyone will take a look at his website. It is thehealthymind.com. It is wonderful. Lots of scientific information there. Very helpful and interesting.
I wanted to thank you very much. I mean, it goes without saying, if you look at the TMS Wiki and all that you have created over these years, I mean, it is absolutely stunning to me.
Well, and the entire team.
But yeah. I just, just so you know, and continuing, I mean, you've taken what has happened to you and have provided it on a level that can literally reach those around the world. And I mean, it's all of us know how important that is, and we need to continue to let you know that it's just we couldn't have one without the other.
Well, thank you very much, and I will accept that thanks on behalf of the rest of the team. There's about 20 of us now on a mailing list, and we've got our board and all. But in particular, I want to thank Pranav, who moderated the chat room that went along with this. I will put an edited transcript of the chat room up on the forum thread at tmswiki.org, where we will also have a link to an MP3 of this recording of the audio from the call if you want to listen to it again and get anything. Dr. Zafiridis, I know you're on the forum. Would you, if people post follow-up questions based on something that you said, if they listen, would you be willing to, if I drew your attention to the thread, would you be willing to maybe take a look at those questions at least? And if you have anything,
absolutely,
jump in. That would be wonderful.
Absolutely. I'm happy to do that. If you want to post there or email me, it might be better, though, to do it on the forum just so then we can reply kind of to everyone and have kind of
exactly.
a transcript of that. So why don't we plan on doing it that way? But anytime anyone has something like that, if I see it or I'm directed to it, I'm happy to answer.
Well, that's terrific. I've thanked Pranav. I also want to thank Becca, another member of the PBDTMS Peer Network. She also helped moderate, and then Matthew, the one who runs the weekly chat every week from 3 to 4 at this same location, kind of had an infrastructure and an audience in place, which makes this so much easier. I guess that's it. I guess we will wrap up. You can hang up if you'd like, Peter, unless you have any closing thoughts you want to say, and then I'm going to go and do my little disclaimer thing again.
No, I just wanted to say thank you to all of you to continue to do what you're doing, and I would look forward to, and I anticipate that I'll be back on here at some point in the future again.
Oh, wonderful. I hope so.
Yes. Please, okay. please. I'd love it. It was great.
Okay. Thank you
everybody.
Very much.
Alrighty.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
So this is Forrest. Just doing the final stuff. Like I said, we're going to put a recording up, maybe on YouTube. Maybe at some point we're going to turn it into a podcast. Who knows? And don't forget, I think Peter was excellent at emphasizing this, that, you know, this is just general information. We're trying to help you out. Always, if you have medical concerns, you want to talk to your doctor. If you have emotional concerns, you want to talk to a therapist. Make sure that you get the help that you need. And let's see, I've got a couple other things I try and say. Oh my goodness. I think we frank discussions of controversial topics. Yeah, I'm not going to read the whole disclaimer. I think that would get rather boring on your half. I'll put a link to it in the thread. I guess that's it. Thanks you everyone for showing up. We do these periodically. We always announce them, the PBDTMS Peer Network announce them